is Mr. Coffee as they reach the top of the hill. So a long run now before they cross over flight number 3. In fourth position, Nordic Combined.
This is the OTB Television Network, a service of Capital District Off-Track Betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. The day after, as it were, Breeders' Cup Friday and Saturday, Breeders' Cup 2020 in the books, and some great storylines, of course, coming out of the weekend. And we will hit on all of those with our guest this morning, Steve Bick, my co-host during the summer at Saratoga with Loose on the Lead, but of course the host every weekday morning on Sirius XM of At the Races. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of great Breeders' Cup, post-Breeders' Cup talk on the radio show coming up this week. But he was pre-Breeders' Cup down at Keeneland all week, so I thought we'd reach out and get some first-hand thoughts. Steve, good morning.
Seth, good morning. Good morning, everybody.
Happy to have you on board, and let me just reach over. My mic had flipped off there, and so I had to re-mic up. But, Steve, before we get to some specifics, I just want to always get the overview. Certainly, as we sat back and watched, weather-wise, you couldn't have asked for a better couple of days, Friday and Saturday. But I'm just curious, 2020, the year of the pandemic, what was the Breeders' Cup like with the limited number of people on track as compared to other years?
Well, this is actually a more difficult question than you might expect. The opportunity for owners and for breeders, 6 tickets for owners, 4 each for the breeders. The expectation was you could have maybe 1,500 to 2,000 people. It seemed like there was a lot more than that on Friday, and it generated, I saw online, it generated some real dissatisfaction that it seemed like there's way more people there than there should be. I do think that Friday there were more people there because of the 5 races on the undercard, those people got to come as well. So the apron looked pretty busy on Friday. There were less people there Saturday than there were Friday. That said, this is a problem, and the sooner we're able to get the fan base public back onto the racetrack, the better everybody's going to be. Because I found that part of the equation very unsatisfying. There was something very troubling about a restricted company scenario where only certain kinds of people were allowed. And this can't go on for much longer. Granted, we're going to go from 0 to 60 in terms of fighting the pandemic starting tomorrow when a task force is put together by the president-elect. But the industry needs to move as quickly as possible and as the opening elements improve, because this is unsustainable. And it also sends a very troubling message.
Can you compare it to Saratoga this summer?
Well, Saratoga, there was nobody. It was Saratoga was you know, they're you know, it was like a postage stamp on a manila envelope. This had you know, the paddock looked like a fairly, you know, like a fairly typical Saturday stakes day. Compared to Derby and the other days that we've been on hand, I don't know. It had a cocktail party atmosphere. In fact, there was a little. That's maybe what bothered me, was that there was a little too much frivolity and gleefulness at the situation at hand. The sooner we get our horse players and fan base back in the buildings, the better off the industry is going
to
be.
I'm curious, you were down in Kentucky this week. Did you get a chance to go to Churchill earlier in the week? Because they have been allowing limited fans.
No, I don't go to Keeneland much when I'm in for Derby, and I wasn't going to go to the Ville while I was, you know, in for Breeders' Cup. There was a lot of work to do on this Breeders' Cup, and frankly, the way the results spilled out, and now let's get into some of the other elements of this that were also equally unsatisfying, including that racetrack. I mean, this is just ridiculous. That last year they're running on the Sahara, and then this week they're running on the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It's just inexcusable. Then fold in the unbelievable inability for us to time the Breeders' Cup Classic. There's no timing, no proper timing of arguably the most watched and most important race of the year other than the Derby. I mean, come on. It just shake your head. But that racetrack wasn't fair. And it makes the results. I mean, while there were performances like Whitmore's in particular that went against the track, the vast majority of the outcomes were heavily influenced by the way that racetrack played. So, you know, that takes away from what everybody's doing as horse players. I mean, we're looking at a set of past performances. We're trying to establish how races are going to be run. And, you know, then you get, you know, I understand randomness if the racetrack changes and so forth. But for the racetrack to be that slick 2 days in a row when there really was no extreme weather in advance of Friday and Saturday, you got to do better than that.
Well, let's get into some specifics now, and we'll kind of work our way back from the Classic. And one of those races that played into early speed was the Classic. We're going to watch number 9, Authentic, get it done. Nice day for John Velasquez, certainly. That was nice to see. But Bob Baffert gets it done. Authentic, pretty much on the front end. He's going to be the number 9 horse. Tis the Law went off as the 3-1 favorite. And a horse that likes to be on the outside, they thought they might be able to work the trip. He just never got into a spot I thought he was comfortable with. He winds up a disappointing 6th in here. But running 2nd is Improbable to number 8. Number 7, Global Campaign, 3rd. And Tacit is 4th in here. And we're watching him go around the clubhouse turn now with, again, Authentic out in front. Give us some of your thoughts on the Classic.
Well, the Classic storyline is, how could everybody just let Johnny take control of this race? That they didn't watch the Derby? You didn't see the Derby, and you didn't think, well, he's going to get tired. No, actually, it's the exact opposite. If this horse is allowed an easy lead, and it would really be nice to know how easy the lead was, but there's no splits. But it was easy enough. Maximum Security, okay, he's on the outside. You figured he was going to stalk his stablemate. That part I got. Global Campaign was potentially a horse that might have engaged I can even sort of understand Castellano, you know, just gaining position. The story that is going to be a mystery is the law. You had a horse that was working out in 58 seconds. You had a horse that was showing how well he got over the racetrack and has already been, you know, demonstrated how important it is for him to be in a position, you know, to be involved, and then you throttle him back. It wasn't that he was inside. They didn't go forward. If that was the game plan, to sit and then stalk and then, you know, kick outside for a stretch run, that was a bad plan. They didn't take advantage of the horse's natural speed and seemingly the speed that he was being trained to offer in this race. It's inexplicable. It's just inexplicable. By my standards, what was the plan? What was the plan with By My Standards, who has successfully sat second or third all year long? Again, a horse that should have been involved. It's just unbelievable. You knew on the backstretch that there was no catching Authentic. When he got into the exact same rhythm that he was in the Derby. It's mind-blowing that these jocks, you know, it's one thing we complain in New York about snatch and grab, you know, Andy Serling's favorite moniker. In this race against the horse that wired the Derby, you're going to let him waltz to the lead. I don't know what to say. It was ridiculous. Not to mention that you knew by 5 o'clock on Saturday that the racetrack was giving it up the front end. It's crazy, just crazy.
It when you look back at the, you know, challenge in the Preakness, and he runs second there, and as you say, loping on the lead in the Kentucky Derby and the win, it does make you scratch your head that as we watched him go down the backstretch there, he's you know, there's a gap between him and the next horse, which does make you scratch your head, certainly, in that race, and he took advantage of it. So I give Johnny Velasquez credit for that. He did what he had to do.
Well, you know what the funny thing is? The first thing I thought of after they crossed the wire was Johnny's got to be kicking himself. I mean, this horse, you know, obviously he's the 3-year-old champion, and I guess he's horse of the year. It had to be kicking himself a little bit about the way he rode him in the Preakness.
Yeah.
Because you got an abject lesson in utilizing a horse's speed. And you know, Baffert's, a lot of his best horses have been successful, you know, doing this. You train them to utilize their speed if they've got that kind of speed. And you know, this horse had shown repeatedly this year that under that scenario, he's a hard horse to get by. And that was it. There's your classic. Kind of a head shaker.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I would think he kind of solidified himself for a couple of trophies on Eclipse Award night. Let's go one race earlier, Breeders' Cup Turf. This was a horse I liked quite a bit, Tarnawa. I think I talked about this one on your show last Wednesday during our OTB seminar. I talked about him. I had selections yesterday in the Times Union as well. Tarnawa was my best bet in there. I was a little bit disappointed, 6-1 on the morning line. I didn't know if that was going to hold up. But certainly when Adaria won earlier in the day, a horse that Tarnawa had beaten, that helped take the value out, as Tarnawa surprisingly opened up as the favorite and then went up a little bit to a more palatable 4-1, paid $11.40. But I thought coming out of the last two races over at Longchamp, that was a good play. And so number 3, Tarnawa, was the winner. The Super Mayor Magical, number 2, runs second. Channel Maker, the number 9, who we see on the lead here, I thought, so the good chance at this point, we're watching him in the stretch. I thought he might do it again the way he's done in the last couple of races. He just couldn't hold off the two ladies late, but runs third in here, Lord North fourth. What were your thoughts in the Breeders' Cup turf?
Well, you know, this was one of those really special, classy fillies that, you know, come along every so often. And I think, she's the fourth filly or mare to win the turf. It's a wonderful story because of Dermot Weld. You know, here's one of the world's greatest trainers. He's won every big race virtually you could think of around the globe. And a Breeders' Cup win had eluded him. He was, I think, 0-13. And, you know, it's late in his career. And it's great that Dermot Weld wins here. And, of course, the Aga Khan. The Aga Khan, the Lashkari, you go all the way back to the first Breeders' Cup. Then there's the matter of Christophe Soumillon having to take off because of COVID, and Colin Keane picking up the mount. What a great story that is. And you know, there had to be a little concern because, as Weld said on Friday, you know, she's not the, you know, most straightforward filly to ride. And Colin Keane was spectacular. And, in fact, the European riders were really the story. Later we'll talk Tom Eves. His ride on Glass Slippers was like, Nick Luck said to me afterward, it's the best ride of the guy's career, simply put. So that part of the equation, the Euros and what went on with Soumillon, I mean, arguably Soumillon lost himself two winners on the weekend. It's crazy because he was supposed to ride Order of Australia as well. It's unbelievable. So anyway, this was a great performance. Keane rode her with supreme confidence. Like you said, Channel Maker ran a game race. Bill Mott got him really good. The second half of the year, what a nice season he's had, the six-year-old. I don't think there was any surprise about anything here otherwise.
Yeah, it was, for Soumillon, you got to feel for the guy going to the sidelines and losing that, but you feel happy for Colin Keane. For folks who aren't familiar, you know, Soumillon, one of the best riders in the world, and so when I saw the switch, I was a little concerned, but Colin Keane won the Irish Champions Championship for jockeys this year, so he's clearly a talented rider himself, as he demonstrated yesterday as well. All right, let's go one race a little bit earlier, one of the more anticipated races on the card. The guys may pick this one up from the start here because you will see number five, Swiss Skydiver, kind of go to her nose a little bit at the start. That certainly didn't help her at all, and that was one of the storylines. Swiss Skydiver, Monomoy Girl. Well, Monomoy Girl, the number 10, does wind up taking this. Valiance 8 runs second. Number 3, Dunbar Road, third. Swiss Skydiver winds up a disappointing 7th as the second choice. Monomoy Girl, obviously, the even money favorite. But Monomoy Girl, now 13 wins and 15 career starts. And after taking off 2019, the entire year, being on the sidelines for essentially a year and a half, Brad Cox brings this horse back to go 4-for-4 this year and win this race, the Breeders' Cup Distaff. Just an incredible story, an incredible career for Monomoy Girl. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the closer we got to this race, after Friday, and the more you thought about it, when I kind of sat down and made my final decisions, you kind of realized, you know what? And then, of course, with the day Brad Cox had on Friday, and then he had another big day Saturday, you just kind of felt like the race was really hers to lose. And yeah, she had a tactical advantage. And you know, Giroux rode her confidently. I don't know what to say really, other than, you know, this field looked really well matched. When Swiss Skydiver, you know, wasn't involved, it sort of became obvious what was going to transpire. You could tell fairly early on the backstretch that Swiss Skydiver was kind of a chicken in a pot. I don't know. I just sort of I could just tell, you could just kind of tell watching the race, Bonnevoie Girl was going to win. I thought the disappointment was Horologist. I thought Horologist was coming into it really well.
I did too. I had Horologist right underneath. I wound up ninth in the field of 10. Yeah.
She never was involved. Valiance. I thought Valiance looked great all week. I talked about her physically. She kind of touted herself, and she got real good here at the end of the second half of the year. So goodbye to Monomoy Girl, who that was her last race, and quite something to come back 2 years later and win this race again.
Yeah, just remarkable when you look at that. And you talked about Brad Cox. He did have the great weekend, a couple of wins Friday, a couple more wins on Saturday. And he's a guy, I said it yesterday morning after the big day he had on Friday. I said, there was a point, it wasn't that long ago, I believe Monomoy Girl was this first grade one winner. So it was within the span of her career. And at that point, we were kind of talking about her. Here's a guy we all got to keep our eyes on. He's on the up and come, and he is clearly, Brad Cox has arrived. Probably the last year or so, everybody has been on that bandwagon as he's now up at that top echelon. And I always say, nice guy, easy to root for. You know, he's always accommodating when we try to get him on the show, and he always comes on and enjoy talking to him either via phone here the rest of the year, but he comes on with us up at Saratoga too, and so easy to root for. And as they say, he has now reached that upper echelon, and you said it, he had a great weekend this weekend. All right, let's jump.
We got three more races with him to talk about. Yeah.
All right, let's jump into Breeders' Cup Mile. In off the AE list, it's Order of Australia at $148, the number 15. Circus Maximus will run second to number one. Number three, Lupio Fernandez runs third. Ivar, I liked Ivar. Ivar can only get fourth. Uni fifth in here. Halliday sixth. But again, getting in off the AE list, and I'm sure knocking a lot of people off out of various wagers. It is Aidan O'Brien getting it done in here with a triple. Aidan O'Brien over Aidan O'Brien over Aidan O'Brien, 1-2-3 in the Breeders' Cup Mile. Your thoughts there?
Well, my thoughts were that, you know, O'Brien came into this weekend off of a six-week run that, as I said to Nick Luck, I asked Dick on Thursday, has this been the worst period in Aidan O'Brien's career? And Nick said, yes, probably. He had two horses die in Australia, including Anthony Van Dyke Tuesday in the Melbourne Cup. Wichita had died the week before. He had the feed mishap with the tainted feed where he had to scratch a half a dozen horses or more for big assignments at both Champions Day and in France. He had the soft turf in France. He had the mix up of the horses, the two horses that were confused. What has gone speak, but his barn internationally is tough to fathom. And tougher to fathom is a horse that had, next to no form at this level, drawing in and winning this race. And, you know, the Boudot had a terrific day himself, winning two races. And he's, he's a guy that we're going to be talking about. He's going to supplant Christophe Soumillon. The first time I even sort of acknowledged that the horse was in the race was when he was standing in front of me waiting to go through the gap to the gate. And I happened to look at him. I said, well, that's a good-looking horse. And then when he rallied up the center, I just laughed to myself. I said, this is unbelievable. I mean, you had the George Weaver horse on Friday at 75-1 off the AE list as well. And, I guess the lesson is you got to look at everybody. The problem is, even if you looked at him, he was still very difficult to make even a C inclusion. I mean, he just compared to that field, it just didn't make any sense.
He was coming off a 47. He was coming off a 47 length win loss, a 47 length loss.
Yeah, I mean, it was hard to figure out a way to, you know, to use him prominently. But I tell you, there are some people I know that hit the all button in the mile.
Yeah.
Because it was we talked all week what a contentious group it was, and you know that if it wasn't going to be one of the obvious horses, then it could have been anybody. And sure enough, it was somebody that was anybody.
All right, let's switch to the Breeders' Cup Sprint, which I'm guessing down in Kentucky had to be a kind of a sentimental favorite victory with Ron Moquette training and Whitmore. Whitmore, a horse I've liked throughout his career. I just yesterday couldn't quite pull the trigger on him off the last couple of races. Not that he was one that I would have argued anybody out of. He was one that you could have pointed to. Disappointment, of course, was George Weaver having to scratch Vekoma a couple of days ago out of the event. But he'll come back, and so we'll watch for Vekoma a little bit later on. But I wound up landing on Yaupon. Yaupon disappoints as the favorite, running eighth in the field. But Whitmore's going to be the number seven here with a nice run to get it done at 18-1. CZ Rocket, the number two, runs second. Number eight, Frenzy Fire, third. And Empire of Gold, the number nine, fourth in here. But as I said, with Ron Moquette, I'm guessing down around the Keeneland area, this had to be a fun victory for folks.
Well, not just in Keeneland. Moquette is pretty much a favorite of everybody from Oklahoma to Arkansas, you know, straight up through back to Kentucky. And, you know, he's had this autoimmune deficiency illness that makes him, you know, you want to talk about an underlying condition in a pandemic. When his illness is, you know, at its, you know, at a high level, you know, he has to avoid people. And so now in a pandemic, you know, it's a death sentence potentially. So for Ron, this has been a harrowing time to bring this horse back year after year to keep him as sound and as competitive as he has. Is really a testimony to how good a horseman he is and to his team. And it really was that was maybe in a lot of ways the most exciting and deliriously happy, you know, part of the weekend was Moquette and Whitmore. You know, and it's funny, the racetrack certainly didn't, you know, you had to worry that the racetrack, I'll ask him tomorrow, you know, he had to be concerned that the racetrack was going to be against Whitmore. But, you know, when you go back, Seth, take a look at the figures. Go back and look at the buyers and the sheet numbers. Whitmore had a class edge. In retrospect, he had a class edge on this field. And in handicapping, you might have looked at it and said, there's really not enough speed to set him up. You know, and then on Friday night, you're thinking, the racetrack is going to be against him too. For him to be 18-1 against that field was crazy, just crazy. And when he stormed to the lead, you know, you have to just smile. I was rooting like a maniac. I picked Firenze Fire, but I was rooting for Empire of Gold and Declan Carroll, Kim and Davey Carroll's son. I was really kind of excited for this, you know, this little 50-1 shot for Terry Off. I had him on the show this week, and he had the lead. I mean, I thought there was a chance that he could hang on. He ended up having to settle for fourth, but that was really, I think that, for me, that was the highlight of yesterday.
Yeah, it was, as I say, it was fun to see. And a horse that I have been, and you're right, you look back the back numbers, as I say, I just kind of jumped off on the last couple of races. But again, I wouldn't argue to anybody off of him because those back numbers, and he's a quality sprinter, and his fourth try at the Breeders' Cup Sprint gets it done. Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf, let's turn there. Audaria gets it done in here, coming in from Europe. Again, another price, $37 for this one. Running second is going to be Rushing Fall in what was just a ding-dong battle down the stretch. Harvey's Little Goyle runs third in here, and Lady Prancelot runs fourth. But as I say, this is some battle down the stretch. And there was a few strides where I thought, and we're watching it here, where I thought, oh, yeah, Rushing Fall is going to hold on. And then she just couldn't hold off the late stride just at, as they come to approach the wire. But Audaria gets it done there. And I will note, you know, you put out the nice guide through At The Races, the nice Breeders' Cup guide. And for folks who were looking, they may have picked up a little win money on this horse if they used the guide. So a good job there as well.
Well, that was Rick Hammerly, and not only did Rick come up with Audaria and make her a win candidate, he had the exact. He also hooked up K-Dix Go, who won the Dirt Mile. So happened that Rick's two races was the Dirt Mile and the Filly and Mare Turf. So he basically, his entire play was essentially Nix Go and Complexity with I think six horses in this race. And so he hit the double two, which paid okay. I think paid $40. And, you know, Audaria ran great. This was a very good, ride by this Pierre Boudot. He hit the first of his two wins. The story, though, Rushing Fall ran her ass off. And she would have won this race had that crazy Cayenne Pepper not lit out the way she did. Cayenne Pepper changed the complexion of the pace of this race, and Rushing Fall was always going to be in, you know, in fairly close reach of the lead. And so when the race unfolded the way it did, and Cayenne Pepper, you know, crazily forced the issue early, Mean Mary went with her. And that really gave Castellano not much choice but to stay within reach. And that hurt. And it kind of took the edge off of Rushing Fall's punch in the late stages. And that's the reason that Boudot was able to corral her and ultimately just get, you know, basically, it was a little bit, it wasn't a head bob. I mean, Boudot had her measure in the, you know, in the last couple of jumps, you could see. But Rushing Fall, the exacta at Keeneland. I singled Rushing Fall on everything. I really thought she couldn't lose or wouldn't lose. For me, kind of put a halt at a fairly key juncture in the day. But, you know, happy to have Audaria win. You know, for James Fanshawe, a young trainer, youngest trainer that Nick Luck has told everybody is on the upswing and is becoming, you know, pretty prominent in the UK. This was a nice race. I don't know what else, you know. This is really one of the best races year in, year out. This Filly and Mare Turf never disappoints.
Yeah, you're right.
It's always terrific. You know? Never.
All right, let's shift to the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. We're going to watch Nix Go, who you mentioned a moment ago, won this one. Number five, Nix Go, as the favorite. Jesus' team, the number 11 second, number two, Sharp Samurai third, and Complexity. I was surprised Complexity went off at 9-2, but Complexity, the number 10 horse, runs fourth in here. But Nix Go took the action and got it done for the aforementioned Brad Cox. Joel Rosario on board. Final chart margin here, as we can see him coming under the wire, 3.5 lengths. Your thoughts on the Dirt Mile?
Well, you know, the race on paper seemed to be between Complexity and Nix Go, and you know, all you have to do is look and see at the race that, you know, the race that Nick Scow ran, you know, leading in as a prep to this. And obviously, Brad Cox, you know, has kind of recaptured some of that momentum that Nick Scow showed as a two-year-old. You know, then he kind of, you know, he kind of fishtailed, gets the barn change, and, you know, Cox has got him, you know, back dialed in. You know, I don't think there was anything surprising about this. I kind of was kicking myself. You know, Jesus' team has been really good. He's been good for now, but really the whole year for Jose D'Angelo. And you got to admire that. This is, you think back to last year, this horse was a lot like Spun to Run, you know, kind of that mid-Atlantic, you know, seemingly second-tier three-year-old. But what a great effort, and a nice ride by Louis Saez. Sharp Samurai, you know, I respected Mark Blatt, the decision to, you know, run him on the dirt. That gets rewarded. You know, Complexity, I think we all wondered, you know, getting back to two turns, you know, that's been the question mark. He ran okay. You know, there wasn't much to this race other than to key off of either the winner or Complexity. And, you know, then you could have feathered in a couple of different horses. I was disappointed for Grant Forster. I was hoping Pirate's Punch would run better. But anyway, you know, there was a couple other things. Art Collector.
I put Pirate's Punch on top, so I was very disappointed.
Yeah, that would have been a disappointment. Art Collector, you know, it seems like his lightning in a bottle from earlier in the summer, fall, just didn't get re-energized. I didn't understand War of Will, you know, running in this spot. You know, but it was, you know, I'll tell you one thing. You mentioned, you know, the way the race was bet. It seemed that, you know, any time a Brad Cox horse was live on the board, it ran. I mean, it was kind of a they knew scenario.
All right, let's go to the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. It's going to be number 6, Glass Slippers. You mentioned the jock before, and on this one, he'll get up by a chart margin of half a length. Wet Your Whistle, the number 5, will run second. Leinster, the number 7, third. Number 14, Extravagant Kid, fourth. Got Stormy. I took a pop with Got Stormy. I just thought off the last couple she was interesting, but she winds up 5th in here. But Glass Slippers at 10-1, $22.40 as they come down to the wire here, does pull away. As I say, it winds up to be about half a length as another horse comes there. Wet Your Whistle and just gets to a half a length closer, but it is another European import getting it done in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. Your thoughts there?
Well, this was significant because the Euros that have come for the Turf Sprint since its inception, they've disappointed time and time again. And, you know, it's been convenient or easy to say, well, you know, they're not running on the straight, you know, which is how most of them run the sprint races and you know, the turf sprinters worldwide, they typically run straights. You know, then there was the downhill course at Santa Anita, and there were milers that tried it, and, you know, milers are supposed to do well down the hill. I mean, domestically, they do very well down the hill. So for a Euro to finally break through and win in the turf sprint, it's not insignificant. The ride was spectacular. And, you know, for those that play exchange wagering abroad, I really would be curious what the in-race running odds were, because, you know, early in the stretch or even mid-stretch, you would have thought that you know, she went off at 10-1. You would have thought she was 2 or 3 times that mid-stretch. And somehow, you know, the things opened up for her and finds a couple of seams, and she accelerates and finishes. And you go back and look at her PPs, and we talked about this during the week. Every Euro type that I had visit, the long shot lad, Kev Humphreys, Nick Luck, as well as who else? Marcus Hirsch, Vance Hansen. We all, you know, had to acknowledge that this is a filly that was knocking heads with Patash, who, if Patash had been here, he would have been 4-5. He's the best turf sprinter in the world, and she's held her own against Patash. So, you know, for her, not that she wasn't respected, because 10-1 is a, you know, in a field like this, 10-1 was, you know, a good price, but it wasn't like a giant overlay. So this was a significant performance. I talked to Mike Trombetta afterward, and Mike was thrilled. And the reality is that if not for that ride, Wet Your Whistle wins this at 26-1. Coming from dead last. I mean, he broke badly. I'll tell you who else could have won this race. There's a million trips. I have not watched a single replay yet. I made it all the way to Erie last night so that I wouldn't have as long a ride today. And other than, you know, when they were up on the stream minutes after the race. Front Run the Fed, if he doesn't have that bad start, he could have won this race. I really would invite everybody to watch this 3, 4, 5 times. I think you're going to see a bunch of trips in here, horses that are all messed up and dirtied up. Extravagant Kid, I mean, having to break from the 14 hole. And I was with Brendan Walsh when the horses were, you know, crossing over to the turf course. And you know, Brendan's two horses, it was crazy. Extravagant Kid. Actually, I think they ended up going off around the same. Yeah, they did. They went off at 18 and 19-1. But there was a period where Just Might, or Intimistic, was taking way more money than Extravagant Kid. And then Extravagant Kid, his odds never changed. It seems like Intimistic took money and then floated up because Intimistic was about half that price heading to the turf. Anyway. You know, this is a lot of fun, the turf sprint. You spin the wheel, you take your chances. But she, you know, she was a classy filly, and Kevin Ryan, and also for the older breeder, Mr. Holcroft, I'm going to forget his first name. He seems like quite a character, and he was pretty tickled. That was a fun, you know what, that race and the dirt sprint, those were two really fun events yesterday.
And finally, we kicked off the Breeders' Cup action yesterday, Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. And it was a powerful performance from Gamin. Gamin, the number two, will win this one. Serengeti Empress, second. Bell's the one, third in here. But Gamin, again, another nice win for Johnny Velasquez on the day. Gamin gets it done for Bob Baffert and Johnny Velasquez in, again, just a dominant performance that kind of was eye-popping. Your thoughts on the Filly and Mare Sprint?
Well, and a lot like Koenigs Go and Complexity, as well as Swiss Skydiver and Monomoy Girl, this was another race where you basically said to yourself, something's going to have to happen unusual to beat one or the other. So from that, you know, using that as the first measure, you then talk about the tactics and about these two horses, Serengeti and Gamin, in terms of their, you know, the kind of races where they're, you know, at their best. Gamin, her three, you know, go look at the PPs now and put this race in with the Acorn and the Test. I mean, she has run three mind-blowing one-turn races. I mean, spectacular. And, you know, the Kentucky Oaks, she tried, and you know, it's obvious she didn't at this stage in her career. Baffert, I know, wants to stretch her back out next year. At this stage in her career, the mile in the eighth was, you know, was a little bit out of her range. But her three sprints are just spectacular. And, you know, I don't know if she needs to, if she does need to be stretched out more. But there were a few things that happened here that were really to her advantage. That filly at scratch in the midst of Biz was going to be, you know, in the four hole. And you knew that Serengeti Empress, she is always going to get the lead. Her career ended yesterday, and she certainly, ended admirably. But it was going to be a question of how Gamin was going to be able to put herself in a more advantageous position. I'm not going to pretend that in the midst of Biz was going to stay with Gamin all the way down the backstretch. However, she would have impeded Gamin for the first 150 yards, and instead, Johnny had room to get out and get off the rail, and then once Serengeti Empress cleared, he was then able to kick outside, and that really keyed the difference. And horses' positioning, the race dynamics change a lot. And Gamin got a tactical edge because she has already shown that she doesn't have to have the lead to win. Serengeti had to have the lead to win. And so when Gamin corralled her, you knew it was over. And, three outstanding performances. What? A 108 buyer, a 110, and a 108 buyer again yesterday. Or no, a 110 yesterday again. I mean, she's as good a Philly sprinter, as a three-year-old, as we've seen in recent memory. I mean, really exceptional.
Yeah, as I said, eye-popping again yesterday, and you tossed in what we saw up in Saratoga, the Acorn as well. Just before we move on from Friday, another eye-popping. I wanted to get some thoughts and see what maybe the reaction was around the track to the opening race yesterday, Nashville. I mean, I was on track for the career debut, which, September of the three-year-old season, you're thinking this is a belated debut by definition, but Nashville looked great up at Saratoga, validated that in the second start of the career at Keeneland, and then was just, again, another eye-popping performance to open the day in the Perryville at Keeneland yesterday. Nashville for Steve Asmussen, another on the Steve Asmussen assembly line of sprinters. What was the reaction down there for Nashville in the opening race yesterday?
Well, I mean, everybody was agog. I mean, what else are you going to say? It just was so facile, and Santana, just basically had to stay on and steer him around, and then he was even a little geared down late. It was a tremendous performance. This is obviously a horse that has had some issues, and that's not unusual when you've got sprinters like this. Like Mattoli and like Volatile, and go back to McLean's Music, the one start performance that, was so spectacular that it earned him a chance as a stallion, and he's becoming a tremendous stallion for Hill and Dale. And you understand, they say the slow ones don't get hurt. And here's an example, because he obviously has got to be handled a little gingerly, and we'll see where they go from here. I imagine they'll try to get him to the Malibu and get that grade one. Andy Beyer will be with me tomorrow morning at 9:20 for people who don't seem to understand how speed figures work. It's been 30 years. I would hope that people might be able to catch on by now, but no, they don't seem to want to understand how this works, and that just because a horse ran a race in 1 minute and 7 seconds and 4/5 at 10:30 in the morning, and another horse ran a few ticks slower 4 hours later, why one gets a better buyer than the other. It's unbelievable. The buyer figures seem to make people's minds just melt. I've never seen anything like it. It really is. It's astounding. There are people who want to know, well, why didn't Nashville, how can Nashville not have a higher figure than Whitmore? Well, let's see. Because are we going to believe that the horse that finished second, Wild West suddenly ran a 102 buyer? Suddenly a horse that has never run anything like that, suddenly that's how fast he ran, magically, because the drafting, Nashville went so fast that he carried Wild West with him. I mean, it's preposterous. You've got a field of horses in a Breeders' Cup sprint where we know how fast they all are. And the clock, the timing of the races and the horses and how they finish, they tell you what the figures have to be. It's not the other way around. It's not a formula. It's not a computer-generated number. There are companies, there are speed makers, figures that do generate numbers by computer, and they're wrong and they're useless. It's just amazing to me, Seth. So Andy's going to be on with me to explain a few things. There's also, I suppose we'll talk about it next. There's also the line that was reinforced yesterday and Friday that figs don't lie. And so when a filly earns three figures in the 70s and she's running against horses that have run figures in the 90s, then she's not supposed to be a 4-5 favorite. We're talking about Princess Noor, who had shown that she was only this fast. And the other horses in the juvenile fillies had shown they were that fast. But somehow, Princess Noor was going to sprout wings. And suddenly, she was going to be literally 15 lengths faster on Friday than she had been so far in her career. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I got people thinking, oh, it's Baffert. Maybe the horse was better than we saw because she was winning by so much. But I didn't get that the horse shouldn't have been favored. With those numbers, that she went off favored was crazy. And we do have to just kind of quickly just maybe overview Friday a little bit, because there's the early post at Aqueduct, so we got to kind of wrap things up. But let me just hit on Friday's results. Breeders' Cup, sure. Juvenile Turf, Golden Pal kind of validated what we saw up at Saratoga. I liked him. He was in the Times Union my best bet on Friday. He looked really good in the turf sprint. Fire at Will, talk about odds. And this is what makes the Breeders' Cup so much fun. Coming out of the win in the Pilgrim, you get $62 on Fire at Will in the Juvenile Turf. Juvenile Fillies, it was Vequist. No surprise there off what we saw in the spin away, but that one at 6-1, I thought, offered some good value. Aunt Pearl in the Juvenile Phillies Turf, an Essential Quality, put a stamp on his two-year-old season, winning the Juvenile. The disappointment there, of course, the fourth place finish from Jackie's Warrior at 4-5. Again, just some overview thoughts on Friday's action.
It kind of spoke for itself. Golden Pal was spectacular. Wesley Ward with that type. People got overly concerned about the 14 hole. It's one of those scenarios where especially in the Breeders' Cup, don't let those post positions snow you. Don't let them, don't get off horses. All you got to do is remember back to Caracanti from the 14 hole at Santa Anita in the mile. If a horse has got the ability to overcome those kinds of things, and Golden Pal with that speed obviously did. Good job by you in the guide, by the way. You had Golden Pal on top. You had Cowan with the Exacta, so that was nice. Odd Pearl and Fire Will, I mean, that was crazy. So many times at the Breeders' Cup, especially when you're on track, you're busy, and all of a sudden you look up and you see, that price, and you're like, ay, 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 this is nuts. I didn't happen to like him, but at 30-1, I would have liked him a lot more than I did, than on the morning line. And then the two main track horses, Essential Quality, I knew could win. I wasn't in love. I was hoping Reinvestment Risk. I was hoping Reinvestment Risk would turn the tables. The Jackie's Warrior, there's another example. There's certain things that you can legitimately worry about, and there were some signs that Jackie's Warrior wasn't going to necessarily translate so quickly to the two turns. Pedigree was part of it, but there were also some things that he did in the Champagne that were a little bit of a red flag, swapping leads and stuff, and there were some indications that he might not translate So, but obviously we got, it looks like we got some nice 2-year-olds. The fillies were wonderful, and DeQuist was my highlight, really, in a lot of ways of the weekend from a betting standpoint. I loved her, and thought that, you know, I thought she and Recruitment Ready both had the same scenario, Seth, that they were going to get better dynamics, and certainly DeQuist also got a great ride by Joel Rosario, who never wavered. That was exciting. Thrilled for Butchie and Ginny Reed to get this kind of win. Gary Barber, good weekend. It could have been spectacular, but Gary Barber he had horses all weekend long. Got Stormy, Channel Maker, many, many more. Gretzky the Great, etc. But that was a nice performance. And actually, my biggest success of the weekend was the DeQuist Monomoy Girl 2-day double, which actually, you know, kept it from being a lousy Breeders' Cup. It kept the losses to, you know, a fairly modest amount, and made it okay. You only got to cash one or two tickets over the 2 days, and you know that keeps you going. And some people did great. Congratulations to Marshall Graham, who wins the
yikes, DCC Marshall and
Jonathan.
Yeah, Jonathan. They knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, they won clear. Good story though, Dylan Donnelly. You know, who's in a wheelchair from an accident. He's going to win the NHC Tour. Dylan was a great third in there. The BCBC, always fun. We'll have Marshall on the show on Tuesday. And
we should say that we're talking the Breeders' Cup, the BCBC handicapping. And didn't he wound up with $170,000, right?
That was, he had a $7,500 exacta in the Classic.
And Kinchin was 106.
40 something.
Kinchin was 160 something. And that's I am not including their prize money.
Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah,
just, that's just the bankroll. That's the bankroll. You start with 7,500.
Yeah, crazy. So congratulations to both of them. And yeah, thanks for inviting me to participate in the at the races betting guide. And I want a do-over on that VQuist day out of the office exacta. I couldn't get through my head in a 7-horse field. That was a $48 exacta. So I should have at least had some kind of a backup in that race. You know, I did okay with the other race on the agenda, but that one I kicked my. There were the horses I had second and third, and I made the point in the analysis that I thought VQuist was going to be solid value. So I kicked myself a little bit. I want a little do-over on that wagering suggestion, but still it was a lot of fun. And as I say, for folks who picked it up,
great job.
Yeah, Jim Scully had a couple of good races too, and as you say, Hammerly, and there was some nice info handed out. So good job to you on that as well. I had it all linked over on Equidaily, so I hope some people, and I mentioned it here, I hope some people picked it up and took advantage. Steve, got to wrap it up.
Seth.
Yeah, no problem. Appreciate it. Got to wrap it up, but always enjoy the conversation. The boots on the ground, as it were, as you were there at Keeneland. And again, looking forward to listening this week, where I am sure you will have plenty of Breeders' Cup wrap-up on the radio show all week long.
Absolutely. Thanks, Seth. Thanks, everybody.
Appreciate
it. Hope you did well.
Yeah, Steve, get home safe, and appreciate the conversation. Steve Bick from...
I'm already in Charlton.
Oh, there you go. So you're home by lunch, baby. Very good. So, again... appreciate the conversation. Steve Bick from Sirius and XM's At the Races. And as I say, he'll have a lot of great Breeders' Cup post-conversation this week with many of the participants. I'm going to wrap things up because, again, it's an early post time at Aqueduct today, 11:50. So they're already underway with the pregame show. So don't forget, you can come to the Clubhouse Racebook today for football if you want to watch racing and football action. NFL Sunday today here at the Clubhouse Racebook. 7-Eleven Central Avenue in Albany. All right, let's get to the pregame show from Naira. Wrap up this edition of Racing Across America. Thanks for tuning in. I will be back in with Naira kicking off shortly. I'll be back shortly with OTV Live for a Sunday afternoon. We'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV,
a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.